Hell,
sure.
Or if you buy XP, you can only put it on an HP, you know, whatever it happens to be.
So was anything resolved in that suit?
Well, they are moving towards a settlement.
Okay.
Basically, it's an alternative dispute resolution to keep the public eye away from their disagreements and to reduce the legal costs. It would eliminate any rulings that would set a precedent claim that Apple, SciStar claims that Apple is violating antitrust laws by tying Mac OS X to only their hardware and thus creating a monopoly. This could result in a payoff or a profit for SciStar's business, but eliminate their line of Open Computing Mac compatible PCs. So on the other hand, what's to prevent another company from doing the same thing?
It's funny that you mention that because I've got an article here with other SciStar news. They're planning an OS X notebook.
Apparently it's not settled.
A spokesperson for SciStar tells Apple Insider that the company is working on its first Mac notebook, which it will price aggressively. There's no mobile Open Computer at the moment. I can tell you that it is something that's in development. Once we release a final product, it'll be posted on their website, along with automatic notification for all Open Computing newsletter subscribers. So nothing has been set as far as price or release date, but they're working on it.
Well, I definitely see a lot of parallels between Apple and Microsoft of the early to mid-90s.
Sure.
You know, back at the time, I mean, Windows was, people absolutely loved it. I mean, there was, if you weren't running Microsoft, I mean, come on, get with the program here.
Exactly.
You know? Especially yep. Windows 95 came out. I mean, they had the Rolling Stones dancing and singing for them. And they were excited.
That's right.
You know, and OS X, it's, people love it. They think it's great. And it, unfortunately, unless you want to put that on Apple hardware, sorry.
Yeah, that's true.
So it will be interesting to see over the next year or two, especially as Apple has been becoming more popular. You know, there's still only about 9 or 10% of the market share of computers out there, but that's certainly something to think about. So apparently that's not wrapped up, Kev, if you are reading a newer article than I had. That was from last week. We just didn't have time to get
to
it.
Yeah, this just popped in, so I don't know which one is more accurate, but both are true. So this is also very important, Dave. You're going to want to pay attention to this. I know this. You lamented the day that this store pulled out of town, but good news for you. Discount retailer Big Lots is the latest.
That was you, Kev. That, you were,
is the latest to join the online parade. Until now, the company had relied on sales from its more than 1,000 brick-and-mortar stores, but it's making some of its merchandise available on its website, and it seeks to move its selection of closeout toys, electronics, tools, sporting goods, and other items. The company says it plans to retain what it calls the treasure hunt atmosphere. I like that.
Yeah,
I like that terminology. Found in its certain stores by offering online shoppers daily discounts on certain items such as TV sets and digital cameras. You want to check it out? It's BigLots.com.
How often do you think you went to Big Lots? Once a day? Twice a day?
No, that's a bit extreme. Now, if we were talking about my dad, that'd be a different story. But I didn't get there as frequently. It just didn't fit in the schedule. So I want to retain that phrase, treasure hunt atmosphere.
There you go.
So if you go check
Everybody
it out, let us know if it feels like a treasure hunt online as well as it did in the store.
Another one, Kev, here. If you like surfing the web, you obviously have to connect through an internet connection. This story is from the Associated Press. Comcast on Wednesday, this is last week Wednesday, said it will be rolling out faster internet speeds over the next few weeks in selected markets to homes and businesses. So what's so
probably
great
not
about
ours?
There? Well, of course not Holland.
How fast?
Well, for residential users, Comcast's new Extreme 50 tier will include up to 10 megabits upstream, cost $140 a month. For businesses, it'll be $190 a month, but it will offer speeds up to 50 megabits per second.
Oh my goodness. That's really fast. For what we have here available to us, that's really fast.
They also have another plan called the Ultra Plan for individuals with speeds up to 22 megabits for download and 5 for upload.
You know, we were talking in the office the other day, and somebody, you know, typically if we help set somebody up, we often run a speed test to make sure they're getting what they pay for as far as an internet connection. And I was talking to one of our techs, and he said, I was at one the other day, it was a Comcast connection. He had a 27 megabit.
Oh, well, that's always download. Really fast at first. That's
how mine. Granted, but that's what these numbers are going to be, too. They're going to be that absolute fastest initial speed boost test results.
Yeah, when I first had mine, it was like in the 30s, 30 megabits, something like that.
What? Yeah. The one at your house?
Mm-hmm.
Which they said the super low-end package.
No, I have the middle of the line.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And they said, this will get throttled down over the next few days. Yeah. It was. It was fast.
That's crazy.
So keep in mind, if you're annoyed with the slow internet connection, even if you do have high speed, just hold out hope for a little bit longer. Comcast is 50 megabits, up to 50 megabits down.
That's right. It does come with a cost. And, you know, if you're not someone who needs all that speed, what you have or some other options that are more cost effective might be better suited for you. If you check your email, you're not really going to notice much difference in speed if you go to a handful of websites. But if you listen to a lot of streaming music online, and if you watch a lot of streaming videos or download big files, that's where you're really going to see the advantage. So,
yeah, we have an email here, computerguys@whtc.com. Question, wondering, Norton Internet Security software that has a yearly cost versus free antivirus software provided by AT&T. What's the difference? Also, second question is, any tips on making a computer boot up faster?
Okay. First question, what's the difference between the Symantec product by AT&T? That's sort of a customized product that they offer you. It's not the full, it's sort of a scaled back version of Norton Internet Security. I think I prefer it to Norton Internet Security because it's less intrusive. It doesn't include all the features of like the full standalone Norton antivirus, all the more advanced scanning features to have plugins for all the instant messaging services and everything else it does. Is it an adequate level of protection? Yeah, it's pretty good. If you're a careful browser, it does a pretty good job. So, that is probably one of the better provided ones. I think, Charter that's with, they use the F-Secure, which has caused a lot of problems for people. That's their free one. That one can be a little troublesome. If you get it installed and it seems to be working correctly, it's a decent level of protection. It's just people have run into a lot of problems installing it and getting it configured to allow everything that it needs to allow. So
as long as you have AT&T for your internet provider, you can continue to use the free security software that they provide you.
Yep, and that's as long as they retain that contract with Symantec or Norton to provide that for you. That might change. They may decide to go with something else.
AT&T used to have it through, it wasn't Norton before. Who was it? It was
Computer Associates. Right, yeah, it might have been. No, that's
McAfee.
Maybe they were the F-Secure.
Well, anyway, it used to be with somebody else. And so there is a newer one out now.
Yeah,
so.
And the newer one's better than the old one was.
Also, a question here. Any tips on making a computer boot up faster? Now, that's the million-dollar question.
That's right. Because, you know, you can have a pretty fast computer and it still takes a long time to boot.
Kind of like my computer.
There you go.
From the time I turn it on to the time it's fully loaded with three applications that I use every day.
Okay, so you have those auto launch?
No, I don't.
Okay. So how about till it's up and loaded without those coming up?
Three minutes.
3 minutes.
Three and a half.
Okay.
So anyway, how do you speed up a computer, Kev?
That changes when you're in a network environment. That kind of adds some things to it. But the biggest thing to do is to just eliminate some of those things that may not need to start when your computer starts. You know, those features like having the weather pop up and tell you what temperature it is. If you use the weather.com little integrated bar or any of those other features or any program that doesn't really need to run. Sometimes you can see them in the bottom right-hand corner by your clock. Each one of those will have a little icon down there. If those represent things that you don't use on a regular basis.
A lot of times it'll be Yahoo Messenger, MSN Messenger. You might not use it every time the computer turns on.
Yep, you can disable that feature where it pops up, and that will cut down your startup time. Now, sometimes there's programs that load and don't load themselves down in that little window, so you can't see them as easily. There's other ways to get rid of those. So that's the first thing, is to eliminate anything that's running on startup that doesn't really need to be. And sometimes that takes a little knowledge as to whether you can disable that or not and how to best go about that. The other option, you know, if you're somebody who hasn't done this regularly, run a defrag. It's not something you need to do very often. You know, I wouldn't be this once a week type of thing, this once a month type of thing. that's excessive.
Once every few months, run disk defrag.
Yep, and that's even more dependent on how you use it. The people who are going to see the most advantage are those people who have a lot of stuff on their computer and then take it off. You install a big game and then you remove it. You have a bunch of photos on, you get rid of them. Music, same thing. That's what really ends up, you know, leading to the fragmentation. So after you run that, your system should start up a bit faster. Beyond that, if you've gone through those processes and that's not really working very well for you, you could possibly go the route of rebuilding your whole system. Basically, you wipe out the operating system, of course, backing up all your data, reinstall Windows, and then bring your data back on. And it's going to run as good as it ever will after you do something like that. It's kind of like a new lease on life.
But for most people, just finding those icons in the lower right-hand corner by your clock and finding out if there's some way to disable that from turning on or even removing it if you don't use it. A lot of times people will have all kinds of programs loading up down there that they don't ever use. So removing those from the control panel is another way to speed it up as well.
That's right.
Give us a call here if you're listening. You have any questions for the computer guys, 395-1450. Kev, openoffice.org has released the new version. Did you know that?
I didn't. I wasn't exactly watching that.
I didn't know that until today either.
Oh, boy.
Well, openoffice.org has set a download record. Openoffice.org was downloaded 3 million times in its first week, with about 80% of the downloads by Windows users. So they're on to a new version. The amazing thing is that only 220,000 of those downloads were from Linux users.
Wow.
So openoffice.org is a free and open source office suite. Basically, it is very similar to Microsoft Word, Excel. They've got a PowerPoint program in there. Obviously, they have their own names for it. But if you want, just do a search for openoffice.org. It's a free download. Some people who have used it really like it. Some people who have used it don't find it quite as user-friendly as Microsoft's version. So,
yep.
But it's free, so you can check it out. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Hey, I'm just tuning in. I got a question for you guys.
Sure.
We bought that new program, Windows Vista, when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent, to me, way too much money for it, for what it does right now. But it's making my computer acting like the base of it, the tower is just running like it's getting overloaded, and we're not even doing anything. You know, we go check our emails or whatever, and it just sounds like it's getting bombarded with all kinds of information.
Hard drives chugging away, yep.
And it's making our I got bad reception, so if you got my question, I'll hang up and listen. But it's making my computer like very slow. I got to watch this little circle go round and round and round before it pops up.
Yep.
But I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Sounds for the good call. Well, that's a pretty common complaint, actually, for especially if you bought Vista when it first came out or a computer with mm-hmm. Vista when it first came out. A couple reasons for that. Number one, maybe the computer just doesn't have enough power or speed or memory mm-hmm. to really handle Vista.
Yeah, one of the things it sounds like you said you upgraded to Vista, you bought Vista and maybe put it on an existing computer. If that computer doesn't really meet all the requirements for Vista, not even maybe the basic ones, but more in that recommended range. And one of the biggest factors is the amount of RAM you have. When your system doesn't have enough RAM, it uses the hard drive, that's why you see so much chugging going on and making what appears to make your tower work so hard.
Like sometimes
it's just like, and you're going to see the window, the thing spinning around on the screen a lot more. And
makes a little noise, too.
Yep, it's often due to that lack of RAM. One way you can help compensate, put some more RAM in that system, and you may notice that boom, immediately takes care of it. You know, I saw one the other day, Vista was running on 512 megs of RAM.
No way, really?
It's just, and it came from it was sold like that. It was an eMachines, a low-end eMachines, with a not real great processor and 512 megs of RAM, and it shipped with Vista. It's terrible. It was awful. It would be an awful computing experience. And that might be part of the problem why people hate Vista so much.
Well, I mean,
is they're buying
it
on these systems that are not designed to run it. So RAM is one of those key components. You got to have enough to make Vista happy.
You know what I like to say, Kev? There are three reasons why people were upset at Vista when it first came out.
Okay.
Number one, they had old hardware that wouldn't work with Vista. Number two, they had old software that wouldn't work with Vista.
Yep.
And number three, they got a new computer or put it on a computer that was just too slow to handle it. And it's kind of like buying a full-size pickup truck with a four-cylinder engine.
Yeah.
It might get,
Do you even make those anymore?
I don't even know if they do. They shouldn't. You know,
so if you had a full size pickup and you just went in there and pulled off four plug wires, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. And that's what it's like. You know, you just does it get you down the road?
Doesn't tow very well. It doesn't accelerate well.
You just not going to be happy.
Yeah, it moves, just not very well.
That's all right. It'll get you there eventually. So that's my.
Yeah, so that's one of the key things, and you know, part of the reason Vista seems to use the hard drive more is because of its built-in indexing feature, which is great when you use it, annoying when you don't. You know, and that's basically going through and it's searching your hard drive all the time and kind of keeps tabs on where information is stored.
You know,
when you ask for something, bam, it's there. But that requires a little more power and usage of the capacity of the computer in the meantime when you're not asking for it.
Do you ever use the built-in Vista search feature?
I do. Hmm. Yeah.
I think I've used it maybe twice.
You ever use it in your email?
Well, in my email, I use it all the time. Mm-hmm.
But I don't. Yeah, most of the time I use it in my email directly. But every once in a while, I'll say, I know I've got something on here somewhere.
That's funny. I was thinking about that the other day. I saw that little search box. I think, you know, I just never search.
Sometimes if you think, like if you're somebody who likes using folders inside of folders inside of folders inside of folders, it might be faster to type that into search and go straight to your file.
Well, but see, mostly
than to dig through.
I live out of one folder on our server. I live out of QuickBooks and Outlook, and that's it.
See, then you don't have to go searching. Yep. But for somebody who keeps a lot in their documents folder and then has all things categorized again and again and again, sometimes it's faster to just use that search than to jump through all those folder trees. So it's great if you use it.
Kev, T-Mobile has unveiled a phone running the Google Android software. It's called the T-Mobile G1. Have you heard about this?
Did we talk about that last week? I think I read a story about that. You must not have been paying attention.
Well, that could be.
Yeah, you were dreaming over there, weren't you?
But it's out now, and it's, I guess you could say that people were definitely more excited when the iPhone releases came out. It, you know, it's a cool phone.
They worked hard at building this up.
Yep.
I think I read something here. I don't know where. I think they're going to be dropping the price on that, and they're actually going to be selling it at Walmart.
Really?
Yeah. To get it in the hands of more people because they don't feel like enough people are using mm-hmm. it yet. So I did read some initial reviews on that, and there were some bugs to be worked out. People would try and do things that they were advertised that they could do, and they were getting error messages and all kinds of stuff. So like any brand new product, it's going to have some glitches at first, and it's going to take them a little while to get it worked out. But if you're one of those people who has to have something right away, you might want to go check it out. It is exclusive to T-Mobile right now. So
for today, that will probably change as time goes on. So, but anyway, it's out. And if you have T-Mobile and you're looking for a cool new phone, that's basically a computer in your pocket and maybe you don't want the iPhone for whatever reason, it's pretty cool.
It is. It is something to check out.
But yeah, it just came out a week ago, so hasn't been out that long.
This is good for you, Dave. Computer use uses to help ease angst of space travelers. Fed up with your job? Tell a computer. While that isn't the case
with space travelers?
Yes. Well, that isn't the case for Earthbound workers. Those whose office is in outer space may be getting some computerized help soon. Scientists are working on giving a computer the ability to offer some of the guidance that human therapists could offer to astronauts. Clinical tests on the $1.74 million project for NASA are expected to begin by next month. It is hoped that the computer can substitute for therapists for those who are cooped up on the long-term space flights and subject to stress, isolation, and depression.
I'll be honest, Kev. It's always been my dream to go to outer space. And if I was in outer space,
I wouldn't complain.
I'd be so happy, I'd probably cry half the time. I'd be floating around.
I need a therapist to help you with your crying so you can do your mission.
Yeah, they can hire me. I'd do it for free. They don't have to spend $1 million, $2 million.
Because you're the world's most understanding person.
Sure. It could be. Let's take this call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Hey, another question.
Sure.
I'm not a computer geek. Can I do that, put more RAM in myself, or do I have to take it in and get it done? Thanks.
Sure. No problem.
I think this was the guy who called regarding the Vista.
Oh, right. Yep.
You probably can do this yourself. A couple things to pay attention to. One is to get the right RAM. The other one is to get good quality RAM. If you buy cheap RAM, you're going to have nothing but problems. So getting some known compatible RAM that's made by a major manufacturer, and then paying attention when you put it in that you put it in correctly. There are some better ways of doing things that it's not going to tell you on the package. But it's worth maybe trying it yourself. If you do run into problems, then you could potentially bring it in. But make sure you buy good stuff.
Let's go ahead and take another call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the Computer Guys.
Good afternoon. I don't know if anybody's ever discussed this before, but quite often when I'm on the internet, I get a little yellow bar that comes up on the top of my screen that says my Java has been changed. I don't know if that's a common thing, but it seems like I get that fairly often, and it's like I don't ever seem to be changing anything down in those settings, or why would that come up if I haven't ever changed that setting that I know of?
Are you using Internet Explorer, the Blue E, for surfing the web, or are you using Firefox?
Actually, I'm using AT&T Yahoo.
Oh, the browser from AT&T that they provide?
Yeah.
It says what exactly does the message say?
Oh, like if I'm going to go into my Fidelity account, I get this big yellow screen that comes up and says this will not show properly because something is. It almost sounds like something had just gone in at that moment and changed one of my Java settings or something.
No, it probably means that they're set. First, security is generally what causes the problems, like certain financial sites or other sites that you have to log into. If Java settings aren't set correctly from a security standpoint, it just means that things won't necessarily display properly or certain parts of that application may not work quite right. A couple ways to go about this. One is to update your version of Java. Make sure you have the newest version installed. Usually when you do that, it will sort of revert back to the default settings. And the other thing to do is to, I don't know where it is in that browser you're using. There's security settings somewhere in the options for that browser. Mm-hmm. You might want to try setting those back to the defaults. Often they will get changed. And if they're set too high, that will cause pop-ups like this. So somewhere in the security settings for that AT&T browser, might be under a tools menu or an options menu, there'll be some security settings and they'll might have an option to set it back to the default. That will probably fix your problem, but I would also definitely go ahead and install the newest version of Java.
No, that's on that Sun Microsystems site then, or?
Yeah, or just into a Google search type like Java.
I think it's just java.com, actually.
Yeah, and you can get the Java runtime environment is what you're looking for. Get the newest version that for your system, and that'll probably fix it for you.
All right, appreciate it.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And one other thing, Kev, that I might suggest is instead of the AT&T browser to try something like Firefox or Internet Explorer.
That's true. With, when people design websites, they don't usually design it for the AT&T browser. They'll design it for Firefox. Primarily, it'll be for Internet Explorer. Usually, it works pretty well with Firefox, but definitely try it with another browser. And if it works just fine, you might want to switch over to that other browser. The AT&T one, it's convenient. And some people like having access to certain things, but know that there will probably be some limitations. So that's a possibility, too.
Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the Computer Guys.
Good afternoon. I'm trying to get a handle on what's the best way to save files for a long term. For instance, pictures.
How many pictures are you talking? Maybe a dozen or a thousand or tens of thousands?
A thousand and more. They just keep stacking up over the years. And
Are these pictures that you want to have access to on your computer or that you just want to be able to kind of put it somewhere and forget about it? It's sort of like a backup.
Put it somewhere and forget about it, but be able to pull it up sometime in the future.
What I would probably do is leave one copy on the computer in the pictures or the My Pictures folder, and then you can get some good quality archival quality DVDs or CDs that you could burn those photos to.
Okay. And how long are those good for?
It depends on they'll say 100 years sometimes. Oh. I would never go as long as they would say. Typically we say, with an average CD that it should probably be reburned every 5 years. Now with the archival grade, they're actually made out of a different material. Uh-huh. You could probably go a little bit longer than that. Maybe 10. It's hard to say because people haven't been doing this for all that long.
Sure.
But if they're stored correctly in cases or envelopes and put away in an area that's probably cool and dark, you should be able to archive things for longer term. Uh-huh. But definitely look for something that's archival grade if it's a CD or a DVD.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
And that's better than having a separate hard drive and storing that somewhere?
This is going to last longer because the hard drive's still mechanical and subject to mechanical failure. But this is definitely a longer-term storage, and it wouldn't hurt to maybe make more than one copy.
Sure.
If you're using a higher-capacity DVD, just burn two and then tuck them away.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, yep. Thanks a lot for your call.
Well, that music means it's the end of another show. If we weren't able to take your call today, give us a call during the week. 394-4940 is our number. We are from Macatawa Technologies. We're located on the south side of Holland at the corner of 31 and 32nd. You can check out our office. Also, check out the podcast. Type WHTC into the iTunes Music Store, and we'll pop up, and you can listen to us at your leisure.
That's right. And don't forget, each and every Wednesday afternoon, 1230 to 1, right here on 1450 WHTC with the Computer Guys, Dave and Kevin. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.